You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 491. Randall is joining me as well, and of course we're going to talk about Notre Dame's outstanding victory over Stanford on Saturday, which both Randall and I were at the game playing our part as much as we could in disrupting the Stanford offense.
Exactly. I think we played a big part in that.
Definitely. The crowd did play a big part. It did. Forced some confusion, for sure, and I think helped inspire Notre Dame's team. It was the first game I've been to in a while, and it was exciting and fun to go to, but I definitely understand why fans don't get that into it and why the players aren't quite as jacked up when it's an early afternoon game versus Ball State. You know, I get it.
A night game is hard to beat. It just is. And honestly, this was where we were sitting was actually kind of a quieter section of the stadium. For some reason, the section we were in was one of the last sections standing. We had to get everyone to stand a couple times.
So. We did. I'd look around, and all the other sections were standing, and then our section was sitting down. But towards the end, and definitely when Notre Dame, yeah. when we were in the corner of the end zone, and when the play was on our half of the 50, they were much more into standing up.
Yeah.
And even on third downs, I think everyone in our section also stood on third downs, even when they were on the other side.
Yeah.
But not everyone was yelling right around us. Especially the row in front of us, they weren't yelling. And they were young kids.
They were listening to the radio broadcast.
I was a little disappointed that they didn't play their part.
Yeah, I saw them. I think it was actually two brothers. The one was actually telling the guy to be quiet the one time. So...
Well, let's talk about our experience there a little bit, then of course we'll get into the game. But Randall, I feel like karma struck. You know how you're always talking about, oh, don't talk about injuries, it's bad luck. And lo and behold, the person behind Randall, for whatever reason, I don't know how it started, but for whatever reason, when Notre Dame, they kept on rubbing your head for good luck. And I don't know if it happened in the first touchdown or when it happened.
It kind of started because we're talking a little bit before the game started that about games we're at. And I said I was at the 2012 Stanford game, all the scoring plays were at our end of the field. And so, well, that's going to happen this time. And so, of course, every time it basically ended up like that. There was one Stanford score at the other end.
And I think there was one field goal. I thought there was one Notre Dame touchdown at the other end, too.
Yes, it was.
Maybe the second Notre Dame. No.
But then it started out as rubbing my hat, so I guess my hat brought good luck. And it was a lot of fun. I was glad they were sitting behind us. Just they were into the game just
like we
are. And so
they
had a little group there that got our section riled up. And we were actually in the end zone below the Jumbotron. I wasn't sure how that would be. You'd have to turn around. But basically, everybody was like, well, we'll be turning around. You know, other people won't. But basically, everybody was turning around. Some people would almost watch that more than the actual game.
Well, when the play was happening, behind us. When the play was pretty much in the red zone on the other side, it was too far away to really see what was happening. And I turned around and would look at the
score. I kind of like to see how the plays were developed, other things that were happening that were not on the screen. So.
But at that point, I couldn't see what was happening anyway. It was so far away.
Yeah.
But with the Jumbotron, you can be sitting anywhere and see what's going on.
Oh, exactly.
And it wasn't, it was a little bit of a pain to turn around, but it wasn't as much of a pain as I thought. And you're right there. I mean, it's huge when you're underneath it.
Yeah. Anyways, but one good thing, did you see the video of Brian Kelly drinking out of the Legends Trophy?
I did.
And there was actually a video released of him telling the team before the game in practice earlier in the week that when they got that trophy, he was going to drink out of that trophy. And I'm pretty sure they've done it before. Coaches have done it before. But after the game, Brian Kelly dumped some red Gatorade in there and drank out of the bowl. But it was just good to see him, you know, interacting with the player, doing stuff like that. I think it makes him more relatable to the players, like it had been in the past. But just the excitement. And the good thing is Notre Dame now has all six of their rivalry trophies in their own building.
That's so good.
All these things about Brian Kelly not being able to win the big games, the rivalries, rank, whatever you want to say, nobody should be complaining now.
No.
And honestly, I did see a tweet about it, but I was like, I wonder what happened to those people that paid for a billboard in South Bend to have Brian Kelly fired.
Yes.
I would like to hear what they're saying now. But I think everyone should be happy. People that were complaining about whatever it is, everyone should be happy right now.
Guess what? Notre Dame beat Michigan week one, and the question is, well, is Michigan that good? Well, they just beat Northwestern, and they're number 15 in the country right now. Stanford just beat Oregon. And Brian Kelly, this Notre Dame team, they're beating good teams.
And not only are they just beating them, they're dominating them.
They are.
38-17 against the number 7 team in the country.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you'll have people out there saying, well, they shouldn't have been number 7. Well, they were, so.
And who knows where they'll end up. Stanford's probably not, they're not a top 10 team, I don't think. But they are, I think they're going to be a legit top 16, top 17 team by the end of the year.
Yeah. I think one of the best things about David Shaw, we talked about what he was going to complain about.
Yeah.
But they did ask him what he was most disappointed about on the offense, and he says, I have no answer for you, next question. So he didn't even, I guess this was a big enough loss for him that he didn't even complain about anything that I know of. So it was good to see.
Did you hear the rant or the comments from after the Penn State-Ohio State game?
About Penn State? Oh, about James Franklin?
No. Sorry, give me 1 second. I'm going to see if I can just pull it up and play it maybe.
Okay, well, I did see the James Franklin got upset with a fan. It's not the last play, but I didn't even pay attention to that game. I looked at the score updates because I wanted Penn State to win, but I don't even know what they were complaining about.
I think it wasn't a complaint. He was talking about the team being, they went from being, I think, from a bad team to a good team to a great team, but they're still not an elite team. They got beat by an elite team, and the work it's going to take from going to great to elite is just as hard as it was from good to great or from bad to good. Man.
Yeah,
and it was good. Very, you don't often see coaches admit that they're not to the level of their opponents. I mean, Brian Kelly did do it after the Alabama game.
Well, he's even been saying they're not an elite program. I mean, they're not an elite team. They've been beating teams, but I guess it's a little bit different because it was after a win. But he has been saying that.
But I liked what he said. I mean,
yeah,
clearly they weren't good enough to beat Ohio State. And they've got work to do, and who knows if they will or not. I mean, they're definitely a good program. No question.
So is Notre Dame an elite team?
No, they're not. There's only a few elite teams at any given time, and definitely Alabama is clearly the one.
Yeah.
And I think probably Clemson, Ohio State are probably in that next little level.
They're consistently winning year in and year out. So.
All right, let's talk about this game.
Yeah, well, I asked by leap because now everybody's saying, "Oh, Notre Dame's favored in every game, and can they go undefeated?" But
they were favored.
I want to put the brakes on everything because I remember walking into this room, getting ready to podcast the week before Miami, and we were like, "You know what? Notre Dame could very likely go undefeated." And then the Miami game happened. Nobody was expecting that, and so it's Notre Dame favored. But before we get too excited. The unbelievable happened last year, and
but keep in mind, or just for whatever Notre Dame was going to be favored in every game at the beginning of the season, although they weren't against Michigan.
Yeah.
But I expected, and we talked about it. We expected them to be favored, which is why I expected them to win 11 or 12 games.
Yeah.
And I think they should. Like, yeah, they're going to be favored the rest of the games, and they should win the rest of the games. And they probably should have won more games last year at the end of the season than they did.
But
just because you should doesn't mean you will.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about this game. Let's talk about, we always start with the offense. Let's do it again. Offense, Ian Book, let's start with the quarterback. I mean, clearly the guy is super efficient. 4 touchdowns, 0 turnovers, passed for almost 280 yards.
And yeah, he convinced me this game. I want him to convince me with the Stanford game, not just the Wake Forest, but he did all the right things in this game. And what he did against Stanford, and just seeing this team, the entire team, the coaching staff, I mean, everybody, he fits this offense, and this offense fits in. I mean, it's a great match.
They are definitely, yeah. Ian Book is doing a great job. He is not the perfect quarterback. He can't throw.
Well, no quarterback is.
Well, that's pretty much true. He's not going to connect 40 yards down the field on a consistent basis, or maybe even ever. But maybe he doesn't need to. Yeah. I was definitely. Well, I guess we'll just sprinkle in what we got right, what we got wrong. Clearly, and I got a tweet about this from a friend, but clearly Notre Dame didn't need Brandon Wimbush to put away Stanford. They were able to do that without Brandon Wimbush's help. And moving forward, yeah, I don't think Brandon Wimbush is going to be a difference maker. I mean, unless Ian Book gets hurt and they, because I think they have enough playmakers in the running game. I don't think that Brandon Wimbush is needed to be relied on.
But
I think he could be.
I agree with you. The problem is that the running game, the guys are getting hurt.
Well, yeah.
You lose your best offensive lineman. And I think against, like, Michigan and maybe the first couple games, I think Book would struggle in those because of offensive line issues. And they didn't have – they had a run game, but the guys were still feeling it out. They were still getting used to it. It's going to be different not having Alex Bars.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. Your best offensive lineman. And two of your – or the two main guys in the first 4 games of the year are hurt.
And
so, obviously,
Antonio
Dexter
Jones
came in and just surprised everyone and makes us – we're obviously not as worried about the run game.
Well, until he gets hurt. And remember, he is injury prone. He's been dinged up every year.
So, yeah, what I'm saying is you said he doesn't look – Wimbush, you know, maybe they don't need him to come in like that. But depending how this all turns out, he might have to help with the run game.
If they're – yeah, that is a good point. If they're able – because they were getting plays against Stanford and against Wake Forest from the running backs, they need to continue to get production out of that group.
Yeah. But as far as the quarterbacks, Ian Book, some of the throws were very – they were right where they needed to be if they had been off at all. He dropped them at least twice. He dropped right over the linebacker's head and to Miles Boykin. Miles Boykin seemed to make every catch. You just throw it in his direction and he'd make it. And I know some of those shovel passes were pretty scary watching it. The one, he was just trying to get it out of bounds, and right question, it worked out okay. But we did actually see a Notre Dame quarterback throw it out of bounds.
We did.
I thought maybe that with the coaching, I mean, even we thought maybe it was Wimbush, but Book wasn't doing it either, I think it has to do with coaching as well. But he did throw it out of bounds a couple times in this game. But some of the passes he threw, I mean, his awareness were just incredible. He had to make a weird throw to Claypool. It was kind of a sidearm throw to Claypool for the touchdown. And he made it. I mean, it was right there. He made it. And the throw to Alize Mack when he was wide open where he had to throw back across his body. We always talk about what a tough throw that is, but he made it look easy. And which Alize Mack had no one even close to him. If he would have dropped that, he would have been run out of the stadium. But, yeah, I thought he played very well. And he did run. He looked faster than what we give him credit for.
He looks faster in real life than he does on TV.
So.
All right, let's talk about the running backs. Obviously, Dexter Williams comes out, first carry, scores a touchdown. And I don't know if he needed a confidence booster, but it was a confidence booster for the fans.
He didn't need it. I tweeted out right before the game started. I mean, Dexter was – most team was already over on the sideline, and Dexter was still, like, practicing sprinting to the end zone. I mean, he was running back. You could tell he just couldn't wait to go. I mean, it was – they had to hold him back, basically. And when he came out there, first play of the game, he had to make a move. It wasn't just like he had a wide open hole and, you know, clear path to the end zone. But touchdown, I mean, he couldn't have planned it better than that.
No. And he also, I don't know how, I can't give him a grade how well he did in pass blocking, but he was there for the pass block on the one touchdown pass for me and Book. I think it was the one.
It was the Wisher.
Yes, the Wisher one. It was just a short pass, but he slowed down the linebacker that was coming through enough for Ian Book to get the pass.
He got
destroyed, but he was there.
He got in the way, and it was enough to give Book enough time to throw the ball. And you know, it seemed like he was going to come in, you know, get maybe 10 carries, and we figured once he misses a block or something like that, he's out. But the way he ran the ball, to see him 100% healthy was incredible. I mean, up the middle, making moves. He waited on his blocks. You could see him just patiently waiting for it to develop. And tough running. I mean, he kept running after the first hit. He played an incredible game as an all-around running back that can handle. I mean, he had 21 carries.
I remember, and I was buying into it and believing it too, that Dexter Williams couldn't be the kind of back that could carry it 15, 20 times a game.
Yeah.
Because that's what we've been hearing. Well, and he probably wouldn't have if you had Tony Jones Jr. healthy the entire time, and if you had Jafar Armstrong, he probably wouldn't have got as many opportunities.
Yeah, it changed. I think it changed a lot with Jafar Armstrong being out.
But he was still a different running back, I think, than what anyone expected.
I totally agree. I expect to see him get a heavy load going forward, being one of the main guys. I mean, he has to. He's so much more explosive than what the other guys are. I mean, with him, there's actually a chance of breaking a long touchdown run.
And honestly,
you don't really see that from the other guys.
No, you don't. And he's kind of like Josh Adams. I mean, Josh Adams also, you know, could break big runs, but sometimes he would only get a few yards, and it's not like, I don't know, I'm not convinced there's that much difference between a Dexter Williams and a Josh Adams.
Yeah.
And Josh Adams was definitely a better pass blocker, but my point is, I don't know if I buy into some running backs are just guys that you use five times a game and you just hope they hit a big one.
Oh, yeah. Well, Dexter, 161 yards.
Because if he's getting production, then keep on running.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's not breaking any tackles, then you can't have him in there. If he can't pass protect at all, you can't have him in there. But if he's getting a few yards here and there, and there's a chance for a big play, which there is a lot more with him than there is with the other backs at this point anyway,
play him. Yeah, I think Jafar has that potential, but he's still working on being a running back. And as far as Jafar, Brian Kelly said he's basically out till after the bye week. They actually did went in and took out a bunch of stuff. His knee was infected. Then Tony Jones, we still don't know exactly how bad his ankle is. Looks like a sprain of some kind. But the thing that worries me about that is last year, that's what slowed him down, was that nagging ankle injury. And he was screaming on the field when it happened. It didn't sound good. But then, you know, they brought in Avery Davis, and he's getting better. But I hope we're not at the point where he needs to be playing.
No.
I mean, Avery Davis did fumble the ball there at the end of the game. I think Alize Mack recovered it.
And he also had a nice run that got called back for holding.
True. So his yards would have gone up.
But you're right, Randall. He can't be relied on. He's not a consistent back. He's not breaking tackles Jafar, consistently.
He's got to get used to being around. I mean, just a different position. Jameer Smith was in there for had four carries, so it was good to see him get some carries. But yeah, I mean, this thankfully Dexter Williams, he gives us a lot of confidence going forward. Dexter did just tweet out a little bit ago that he hasn't ever been this sore as he is today. So 21 carries, 161 yards. I can definitely see why he's sore. But with the running game, I mean, Notre Dame's offense was very balanced, and they actually ran the ball 55 times. Stanford ran a total of 51 plays. So it's good to see that even though they have a passing quarterback, they're still getting 55 carries in a game.
And a big part of that is their conversion on third down, and a big part of that is, too, being productive on the first and second plays of that, or the first and second down. They converted 9 of 17 to Stanford's 3 of 13.
Yeah, so that's a huge part in it.
All right, let's talk about our receivers and tight ends. So Boykin had a real big game, and he doesn't need to play like that every week to convince me. And I'm glad to see it. I would like to, hopefully he'll be a little more consistent, not disappear for 3 or 4 games in a row. And I know that people probably yelling at me, why can't I just be grateful for what he did? And I am.
Well, he looked like a legit number one receiver. The thing I liked the most was that he had 11 receptions for 144 yards, but it's not like he had 144 yards on 6 catches. I mean, he was making short passes, long passes. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of them were actually that long. Well, he had one for 33, but that was a run. But he was making plays. He was catching the ball. He was catching even when it was tough. I mean, in traffic, he was making the plays that you need from number one guy, not just a guy that has, you know, 3 for 75 yards or something. I mean, he was catching
the ball. He was moving. Yeah, moving the chains.
Yeah. And, running hard. Some of those throws were a little sketchy coming in, but he made the plays. He was turning around when he needed to be, and hopefully he can keep that going. And he also worked. There was that first down pass. At first they said it was he didn't get the first down, but then when they reviewed it, he clearly had the first down, but he's reaching for it. You know, he has an awareness of where he's at on the field. And he did get banged up a couple times when he came out, but, you know, one play later he was back in again. And he was playing like a true number one.
And receiver. I've never questioned Miles Boykin's toughness or his intelligence or his want to. The only thing I've questioned is his physical ability.
Well, he can do it. And listening to him on the Jumbotron.
By physical ability, I'm talking about his speed and quickness.
Yeah. Getting off the line. Clearly, that was his issue.
He's big and tall and strong.
They had him talking on the one timeout, I believe, they had him on the Jumbotron talking about why he came to Notre Dame and what he hopes to do and whatever. His voice is so deep. Like,
he's got an awesome voice.
He almost made the stadium, like the bass. It was incredible. So we definitely need to get him on the podcast at some point. But, yeah, Claypool, he continues to do everything except make a lot of plays.
Make a lot of plays on as a wide receiver.
Pass catcher. He did. He made a touchdown. He had 3 receptions. But I thought his blocking improved. He did a better job blocking.
And on special teams, he's been great, I think, every game. And again, he had a really nice play on Saturday.
And he almost caught that one ball. The pass, it was a deep throw. And it was tipped, almost caught by the defender. And then when Claypool was laying on the ground, he still almost caught it with his fingertips, but not quite. That almost turned into an incredible catch that we see Alize Mack make in practice. But he was so close to making that. And he's like right there, but he does continue to impress like on special teams. I mean, his tackling. And I mean, the thing is, we've heard now that NFL scouts kind of looking at him as a defensive end. One team was.
Yeah.
So, but
I still think Claypool probably will have a breakout. Like, he'll probably break out next year, maybe in the bowl game and next year, maybe have a really, like, be that number one guy. It's disappointing it hasn't happened yet because of his physical gifts. But It's happening. It is happening on special teams. He's putting. That's what's kind of weird. He's putting forth such great effort and clearly paying attention to detail to know what he's supposed to do on special teams to get down the field and make the tackle.
I think it's just it's hard. I did watch see what happened when the, it seemed like every pass was going to Boykin. I kind of watched to see what Claypool was doing because often what happens when he's not getting pat, he just kind of slows down. But it seemed like he was still running hard. He's like, oh, he runs a route, but the ball never gets to him.
Well, that's the life of a receiver.
I know, but he struggles with that.
Yeah, he needs to understand that's the life. That's the life you live.
Yeah.
All right. Avery Davis caught a couple passes. Alize Mack, you had the one catch for a touchdown, 35 yards. And, I mean, it was the easiest catch that anyone's ever going to make, but he made it. Yeah. And if he wouldn't have been making it, we'd be, yeah, like you said, screaming at him. And
he did drop one, so
running him out of the stadium.
He had to make it to make up for the other one. Mack was also the one that got called for holding with the Avery Davis. It would have been a first down. Was called back, and that turned into a field goal. They ended up kicking a field goal on that drive, and it would have been a first down. They kept the chain. So that was a big mistake by him. I think it was 3rd and 16. And Avery Davis did get the first down, and then Max called for holding, and they ended up kicking the field goal, and they missed it. So that turned into a pretty big play. I mean, he's got to work on that, but he is getting better at blocking. Komet did a good job of on the one pass. He pulled it away from the defender. I mean, he showed some physicality and pulled away from the defender. It was one of those 50-50 ball, and he came up with it, so that was good to see. And then Wisher got another touchdown. So I guess at the end of the day, Notre Dame is definitely tight end you. Stanford needs to stop using that title and just agree that Notre Dame is tight end you.
Agreed.
So the offensive line, obviously, Bars is out for the year now with ACL, MCL injury, and that is a huge blow to this line. I mean, he's clearly the best offensive lineman out there. And he was also helping Eichenberg. You know, they moved him over there to help Eichenberg with his first year starting. And, well, they did okay after, you know, Rulin came in, took his place, but yeah, hopefully, I guess the tough team, the teams with good defensive lines, they've played a lot of those, but you still won't have him back for, you know, a bowl game or wherever they end up.
And he doesn't have any eligibility remaining either, which is disappointing for him.
Yeah. Trey Rulin obviously came in, took his place, but then they also brought in Aaron Banks, who's playing for Eichenberg at left tackle. But Brian Kelly did talk about it, I think it was Sunday, he talked about those two guys, Banks and Rulin, will be rotating at that left guard position.
And also, Josh Lugg, will he also be competing there for...
He didn't mention it. He didn't mention Lug.
I thought he did. I thought there was three guys he mentioned that would be competing.
Oh, okay. Well, those were the two main guys. But I'm sure Lug... See, the question going into the game was that... Or the thing was that supposedly Rulin was going to get some playing time behind Kramer, that they were going to have a little bit of a rotation there. But I'm still not convinced that I was going to rotate. I think people are kind of overlooking the fact because Rulin played, started the one game. Everybody's like, oh, there's going to be a rotation. I don't think so. Kramer's got that right guard. Yeah, he struggled some, but I think he's got that right guard spot. I don't think it was going to be as much of a rotation as what it sounded like. But Lug would obviously be a third guy that would be helping out maybe on the right side when those guys need a rotation. But we did see an unusual mistake. Sam Mustafa had an illegal snap, so he got called for penalty there. Yeah, Eichenberg gave up a big sack. Was the one that gave up a sack, the one sack they had on book. So the line played very well though against the Stanford team. That even though they're not as good as what they normally are, it's still Stanford, very physical team, and they keep improving every week. But the Bars injury is a huge loss. So.
I do want to mention something. Our podcast host, Blog Talk Radio, was purchased and merged with Spreaker. So we're going to be moving the podcast hosting. Nothing should change as far as your subscription. But if for some reason you don't see a new episode when you typically go to look for a new episode, you might just want to maybe unsubscribe, research for the podcast, and then subscribe again. Everything should work fine, and it should redirect correctly without any issues. But in case you don't see new podcast episodes in your feed, try doing that. Try searching for it and then resubscribing. All right, you ready to talk about defense?
Yeah, this is an amazing defense.
It truly is. And Drew Tranquil, what a stud, playing with a fractured arm, but seems like he's going to be okay and continue to play the rest of the year. That won't hold him out or anything. Did you hear anything about how he was injured?
No, not really. I mean, it's...
I mean, it happened before the game.
Yeah. No, I didn't hear how he was actually injured.
All right, but I guess let's start with Jerry Tillery. Randall, didn't we talk about...
Beast mode.
Didn't we talk about how he was the guy that could be the Drew Tranquil, could be Tavon Coney, a guy that clearly just stands out, and he clearly stood out on Saturday. Ended up with 4 sacks, absolutely...
Which tied a Notre Dame single-game record. So... And 4 sacks, he has 7 on the season now, which leads the country in sacks. So I think that's as many as Notre Dame had last year, total.
You mean 7?
Or the leading for the year.
The leading sacker?
Yeah. I had it written down. I don't have it here.
I can look it up if you want to keep on going. Yeah, defensive line.
Well, yeah, it even got 2 in a row there at the end of the game. Just incredible. It seemed like he couldn't be stopped. And, the defensive line all around, I mean, it helped with the defensive end. It helped for him getting those sacks with the defensive ends coming around the edges and sealing that off, forcing the quarterback inside right into Jerry Tillery's hands, basically, and he finished it off. And, man, I hope he can keep this up. I mean, we didn't expect him to have this many sacks, or I didn't. I mean, I expect him to be a lot better sacks than last year.
He was a sack leader last year with 4.5 sacks.
Yeah.
So,
and he has 7 in 5 games. So, and he basically got 4. He almost matched his season.
Yeah, in 1 game.
But yeah, and he also forced a fumble. I mean, Stanford recovered it then, but he did force a fumble, and it kind of gets missed because Stanford, you know, did recover it, but at some point that's going to go Notre Dame's way.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is a big area where the fans can play a role by being loud and causing difficulty in hearing for the opposing offense. Because if it would just be silent, and an offensive player loses a guy, you know, they can yell and warn and give a little bit, just a split second of a warning. But if the crowd's being that loud, there's no way that there can be communication, you know, while the play is going on.
Well, and especially with a team like Stanford, all the stuff they do pre-snap, I mean, they do not hurry at all. There was one play where Notre Dame's defense was completely – they were switching players in and out.
They were moving linemen.
They were moving. You know, Stanford's base lined up, and they were still moving around trying to get lined up in the right spots, and Stanford just waited, basically. I mean – they should have snapped. I mean, they would have had Notre Dame was not ready at all, but they would have rather set up and be sure
that they're going to run the right play.
Yeah. But
and you can't always do that, and they couldn't do that at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday.
Yeah. So especially like in a game like that, when the quarterback does a lot of adjustments before the snap, it makes a big difference when there's a lot of noise. But the whole defensive line, I mean, even Heinisch was playing early, and he was getting pressure. I mean, he was clogging up the middle, and then he would break away from two guys and still make a tackle. I mean, he made a couple tackles where he had to get away from the offensive lineman and make the play. He did very well. That Hayes interception, he almost got that interception. It was almost too good to be true. But
it was, on the replay, you could see his smile. I mean, he clearly knew that he did. Right,
yeah. And some people said the lack of celebration afterwards showed that he didn't make it, but they were going to overturn it anyways, whether he celebrated or not. But, I mean, credit to the other guys, too, for getting the pressure. I think it was Okora that was pressuring the quarterback. And it was adjustments by Clark Lee as well. I mean, the first half, Stanford was getting, you know, they were getting yards. Mm-hmm. But after the half, they had a total of 31 yards on offense. So, huge adjustment on the defense and getting pressure on the quarterback. The first half, it looked, they're always so close to getting Costello, but they just couldn't quite get there in time. Well, that all changed in the second half, and it made a huge difference. I mean, Clark Lee did a great job in that game.
And Kareem came up with the other sack. Notre Dame had a total of 5 on Saturday. 5 sacks, 4 quarterback hurries. Tillery, on top of his 4 sacks, had 2 quarterback hurries. Kareem had another one, and then Okora had the 4th hurry.
And I'll throw this in with the defense right now. The last 2 weeks, Notre Dame has faced 2 of the top wide receivers in the country in Greg Dortch from Wake Forest and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And they held Greg Dortch to 56 yards, and Whiteside had 5 catches for 30 yards. He did have a touchdown. But these are 2 of the best receivers, and Notre Dame has slowed them down. Basically took them out of the game. And the question was, you know, what's Notre Dame going to do against these big tight ends and big receivers?
I mean, it's tougher. Well,
we saw some of those plays. The one touchdown that Whiteside had was perfect. I mean, you couldn't have defended him any better, and he still made the touchdown. But this defense is playing at a very high level, and it's good to see that.
They need to continue to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And again, I
think
that
is the key.
And I do think a big part of that is when it's possible, get these guys off the field, put in some younger guys, some backups, and get the starters, give them a break when possible.
Kareem is starting a little bit of a trend of getting hurt and scaring us, but then, you know, and finally limping out the field and then being back in there 2 plays later and making a big play. So I've seen it again. Both games I was at, when you're just watching the game at home, you don't see everything that happens. But against Michigan and this week again, you know, Kareem's hurt. He's laying down on the ground. The trainers are out there. You see him slowly get up. They're helping him to the sideline. You're like, oh no, how bad is this? And then 3 plays later, he has a quarterback hurry.
But even then, starting to walk a little bit faster and less of a limp the closer he gets to the sideline. Yeah.
So
at least this week. I don't know about the Michigan week.
Yeah, so I don't know if his pain tolerance is a little bit low, but if he gets hit pretty good, it takes him a couple plays to get back into it. But luckily, it so far it hasn't been anything serious. So,
all right, linebackers, we saw really solid play, really close to great plays as well. Tavon Coney came up with interception. And at that point, you just saw, I mean, it was over.
Yeah.
It was great to just...
You almost didn't even see the interception happen. All of a sudden, you're like, what? Coney's got the ball, and he's running. So, but Tranquil had a near interception.
And that's what I was talking about. Yeah, like almost a great play, too.
Yeah. Well, afterwards, when I found out he had a broken hand, I went back and looked at that, and I thought maybe it's because of his hand in the cast he didn't catch it. But it wasn't... That didn't have anything to do with it. But, yeah, Tranquil had one of the best plays when the pass was incomplete, but he picked up the Stanford,
yes.
player and just basically body slammed him to the ground. I mean, he just picked him up, threw him down. And that was, that got a big reaction from the crowd. And it's good to see them be that physical.
And Tranquil looked great in pass defense, too. He had two pass breakups.
Yeah, and Bilal, in my mind, had his best game at Notre Dame. He had a big tackle for loss where he made the right angle. The defense line was chasing him, but he had a big tackle for loss. And even in coverage, he had a couple pass breakups. And to me, this was by far Bilal's best game. And that's what they need against big tight ends, and that's what they need him to do. His coverage was great, and hopefully that's a sign of things to come. It's starting to click a little bit. So,
all right, cornerbacks.
Julian Love did very good against Whiteside. He did have. No, that was Pride that had the pass interference. Knocked him over. Basically pushed him.
Well, and Drew Tranquil but it was also had a pass interference where that Gilman
yes.
would have intercepted.
Or yes, did very intercept. True. That almost shouldn't have counted because Gilman would have intercepted that whether it was pass interference or not. So technically, shouldn't that be an uncatchable ball? I mean, it was pass interference. Yeah. I'm not going to argue that. But you kind of wonder when the uncatchable part kicks in because it would have been intercepted whether Tranquil was there or not. But Pride had the pass interference in the end zone, which brought them down to the 2-yard line. And that just shouldn't have happened. It seems like they still have one per game where they have a pass interference that costs them like a third down or it's a big play. I mean, especially this was because it brought them all the way up to the 2-yard line. But on the other hand, you're going to get some of this because they're playing very physical.
Mm-hmm.
So you want them to play physical, and I guess this is kind of what you get as a result, but they got to be careful with that. But then that touchdown, like we talked about, Whiteside's touchdown, Love had him covered. I mean, there wasn't anything he could do. It was a great play by Whiteside.
I think he even got a hand on the ball, I think.
He had it over there, but just the way it was played and where the ball was at, I mean, you couldn't have done anything else. Houston Griffith continues to get better, but he's still making some bad plays. He gave up that one. It was a 29-yard catch. It wasn't a touchdown, but a 29-yard reception to one of the tight ends where he was just too slow. He kind of got caught off guard, didn't react quick enough, and it was a big play. So he's still got to work on that because it seems like each game he does give up one big play. But he's a true freshman, so we got to give him that. So,
all right. Safeties, we talked a little bit about Gilman, made the play, but it didn't count.
That was... It should have counted for something just because of how impressive it was.
And even to hang on with it because he was kind of flipped around then too after the catch.
Yeah.
Jalen Elliott, I don't know, ended up with 4 tackles, 1 pass breakup.
He got beat by St. Brown on the one play because he hesitated a little bit. I went back and looked at that. I was rewatching it, and he hesitated just enough. I don't know if he thought the receivers kind of crossed routes, and he just hesitated for a little bit, and it cost him because he was trying to catch up with St. Brown. But then he also almost had an interception. And if the ball would have been thrown how it was supposed to, it was a little behind the receiver as well, but if the ball would have been thrown where it was supposed to go, Elliott would have intercepted it. But because it was off just a little bit, it was behind him. I mean, he jumped the route perfectly, but it was behind him, and he couldn't hang on to it. So he had a near interception, and he already has a couple on the year, so he's going to get another one here at some point. But not quite as many tackles from them as what we have seen in the past game, but a lot of that is because the defensive line was getting them.
Yeah.
Didn't even give the safeties a chance to make a tackle, so... That's good.
And not nearly as many plays either as what the offense Notre Dame is typically facing.
Yeah. I just saw Avery Davis was credited for 2 fumbles.
One of those was a fumble, though. I mean, one was a penalty.
Yeah, I guess I just didn't count. I didn't think it counted with the penalty.
Maybe I'm not remembering it right. I thought he put it on the ground twice, but the one time...
The one Alize Mack recovered.
And the other time, I thought it was a penalty, but I can't remember what the penalty even was.
Yeah, but...
Anyway.
That's what scared me a little bit about him. I mean, you don't want to use him unless you have to.
And even Brian Kelly mentioned that, too, as a little bit of a concern. I forget if it was the post-game or the Sunday teleconference. All right, but talking about defense, wrapping that up, Clark Lee, is there a better first-year defensive coordinator that we've seen?
No.
I mean, definitely not in my memory. Incredible defense by Clark Lee. I mean, and the good thing is he is a first-year guy, so he's not going to be getting a head coaching job, next year, I don't think.
Let's get him past the 6-game mark and see what he can do.
That is true.
I don't think
Brian Van Gorder had a great opening half of a season.
That's what I didn't want to say it because it's I don't think he's like Brian Van Gorder.
I don't
at
think
all.
So either.
But we were singing Van Gorder's praises the first 6 games. But no, I don't think there's going to be a drop because this is a defense pretty much like we saw last year. And here we see his ability to make adjustments and stuff. I think Van Gorder was just. It was a new defense. Teams didn't know what to expect once they kind of figured it out, knew where to beat him. So
and the players didn't know it. I mean,
exactly.
That was also part of it.
Exactly.
Except for Joe Schmidt.
These guys clearly do. So,
all right, special teams. Another good day of punting for Tyler Newsom.
It turned out like that. That one punt looked bad, and then somehow it bounced the right direction and made it look much better than what it actually was. But maybe Newsom was planning on that. But averaged 51 yards, so 205 yards on 4 punts. But Stanford's punter, I guess he averaged less, but they had a very impressive punter as well.
Their field unit had a big goof when they were trying to stop it at the 1-yard line and they let it bounce in.
See, just like that play, it bounced in. Those plays were being like that would have stopped the 1-yard line against Ball State.
Yeah.
Just like, or Julian Love bringing out those kind of things were happening back then. This time they went Notre Dame's way. Newsom did good. Clearly, Jonathan Duerr is getting a lot better too, kicking in the end zone. I mean, they just fair catch him all the time. And Fink actually had a huge punt return. It was 30 some yards. But then Tariq Bracey, who Brian Kelly was singing his praises last week, it's always questionable. Those blocks and the block in the back is always, whatever. I mean, it's always kind of talked about as it could have gone either way, but did have to come back, and then it was a penalty on top of that. Yoon missed the field goal, but we can't blame too much because there was 2 penalties right before they basically moved him back to the 50-yard field goal attempt. So if the rest of the team, the defense would help him out, or I mean if the offense would help him out and not get penalties, he would have made that. It would have been a much easier kick for him. So.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. Randall, do we have our winner of our Main Street Roasters score prediction?
No, I always forget it. I always think about it, then forget about it right before we podcast.
All right, we'll have that for our next episode where we'll preview Notre Dame's matchup with Virginia Tech.
Hey, and Notre Dame is now number 6 in the country, 5-0. They've beaten the most ranked teams out of anybody in the country. So, and they're looking good doing it the last 2 games. Well, wasn't a ranked opponent last or a week ago, but they're getting big wins.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. And until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.